Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Old Chris Things, Tunnel Talk, Trish and Sarah, and Sam Brown will be returning with the AEW match guide this coming week, so keep your eyes out for that. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of ladders and briefcases as we recap Money in the Bank from last Saturday, live from Canada. So let's just jump straight into it, because we've not really got a pay-per-view to talk about there. I end up talking for absolutely ages about the pay-per-view, giving myself an editing headache in the future. So let's not waste any time. Let's jump on over to Canada and talk about Money in the Bank.
And now Drew McIntyre climbing the ladder. No one else around. McIntyre has the briefcase. Drew McIntyre is Mr. Money in the Bank.
Drew McIntyre once again getting screwed over by CM Punk. It's not the case of predictable equals bad. It's like, no, this is predictable. It's like perfectly fine for me. For me, the reason I critiqued the Scotland one wasn't the fact that CM Punk interfered. It was I didn't find the way that they did it that great. I just, in terms of, it was more like how it was done in Scotland that I didn't get on top with. Because my prediction was that CM Punk does attack Drew. I love the idea of him just jumping in from the crowd wearing a Rangers shirt. Sorry, wearing a Celtic shirt, because Drew's the Rangers fan. I love that idea. Just a little thing like that. I found the referee thing just a little bit cheesy for me, but then WWE kind of lives in that world, so it's maybe not that bad. The other thing for me was Triple H loves his kind of tracking shots, follow the people into the ring. I didn't think that that was the time to do it in Scotland. So I know I've been talking about Money in the Bank. It all ties in. It's talking about Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. For me, I was just thinking about it the other week, because every now and then I think about production stuff, because I'm one of those nerds. But I was just thinking, it's like, oh, if you did the referee rundown, but instead you did it from like a high angle rather than close from behind to follow him into the ring, I personally think that would have worked so much better. I'm not saying the Bomb Breaker one, but like, if you do an angle like up and to the right a bit, you got the ramp in shot, and then you got the ring in there as well. And I was like, if you do it for a distant shot rather than a close one from behind, I just feel like it might have worked a lot better. Instead of watching it for home for production, you use that shot earlier in the night, so fans are going, oh, why is this random shot that we've never seen before happening? Which was the case for him running down. We haven't really seen that kind of shot all night, really. We've seen different tracking shots, but nothing really quite like that. Whilst my idea with a further away camera rather than one right behind him. Plus, you're more used as an audience being conditioned of where maybe when something happens in a sporting event, you get the wide angle camera because they don't quite know. In terms of like the closer shots on the ground, they don't really know which one to cut to in a bit of chaos. So you do the higher, wider angle just to make sure you're capturing everything. Yeah, anyway, that's my little nerdy note I randomly thought about. My point is for me, it was more in Scotland, it was about how they did it, not necessarily what they did, it was how it was done, the execution of it. Which I was a bit critical of and just thought, it just didn't hit home for me. This one, absolutely fine with. I'm absolutely fine that the way this has worked. I've seen a lot of criticism as well in terms of how over the course of the week, which is why it's pretty good when I do these shows like later in the week, just of me recording it. I've been able to see the things happen, the initial reaction, and then actually when it's died down a bit. So I maybe just come across more grounded because of that. hopefully that's the case. That's kind of my little aim for it, is it means I'm not whenever I'm talking about this stuff, all of my notes with it in the moment as I'm watching it, but also I've had time to actually dwell on these things and let's see how it settles. In the immediate aftermath, there was a lot of stuff to do with, a lot of anger, I guess, towards the Money in the Bank briefcase being cashed in on the same night and then just completely gone. Some people saw that as a waste of the briefcase, which, why? My immediate question of how has it been wasted? Because the entire point of it is it's a prop for a storyline, or it's a prop to get a pop later down the line. Are you angry that you want the pop? To be fair, WWE has conditioned, especially through the Vince McMahon era, and Triple H is trying to condition out of it, that you've been conditioned to pop for the moment rather than actually be invested in the storylines and characters. And you see it when a character is giving a really good speech on or a really good promo in WWE, when they start to hit on like actual emotions and things, the crowd don't know how to react because they're conditioned to react to the pops and the moments. And that will change within time. AEW is a great example of that, when the way that they've just over the course of the years kind of conditioned of, well, this is how we want you to react. And obviously there's still that spilling over of, well, this is how WWE fans react, and that's how wrestling fans react. But there's a lot of reconditioning going on at the moment. But yeah, I thought this was absolutely fine in terms of the use of the Money in the Bank and the way that it angled, because the entire point is it's meant to prop up characters or set a story in a direction, and this did all of that. It fed into the CM Punk and Drew McIntyre feud really well. The other piece where this works so perfectly, because I've seen the argument of, well, CM Punk Drew McIntyre was already heated for SummerSlam. What happened in Glasgow and the aftermath of Drew McIntyre taking out CM Punk, that was maybe enough. What did you need that next bit for? Well, the answer for that is Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins being brought in because of Drew McIntyre and CM Punk's beef. Seth Rollins, because of their beef, he lost his ability to challenge for that title. Until we get to the moment on Raw where they just went, nah, I'll give you a shot. I was like, well, what was the point? What was the entire point? You're just going to give him a shot, Damien. Ugh. The stakes meant nothing. They meant absolutely nothing. God. Ugh. I personally just felt like the value of this happening specifically at Money in the Bank with that cash-in was added the moment it pulled Seth Rollins in. Suddenly, there's just an extra dynamic that I hadn't even considered. And when you play it in your mind, it's like, oh, what could I do this and that? I had predicted CM Punk interfering, and when I say predicted, that's because they'd set it up. So it's less predicting and more I just watched the show and like, oh, they're foreshadowing this. Okay, cool. Like, that's not me being like, oh my God, how did you know? It's like, I watched the show. They told you. They told you multiple times on the show that this was happening. Not directly. It wasn't just a guy saying it, but that's not how film language works. Like, they told you. They told you. But anyway, I think we'll start, in terms of like the actual action that led to that stuff, we'll start with the actual men's Money in the Bank ladder match to set up the scene for then what happened in the title match later. The boys' Money in the Bank ladder match, Jey Uso versus Andrade versus LA Knight versus Chad Gable versus Carmelo Hayes versus Drew McIntyre. Drew was always the favourite, but there are plenty of other worlds to play with. But you're here for the ladder spot, so let's just go through what happened. Chad Gable dangling as he torched a knee bar to stop Drew's climb, only for Andrade to springboard leg drop the lad. Awesome spot. Andrade with heavy, innovative involvement in the beginning of this match. Great spots with Melo too, as those two found themselves springboard moonsaulting together onto a ladder. Somebody called Andrade the modern day Shelton Benjamin for the Money in the Bank matches. It's like, you know what? That guy that can be trusted to do something that you've never seen before in a ladder match and get that excitement to make crowds go, wait, oh yeah, why aren't you pushing this guy? He's amazing, he's awesome. Only to then never push him. but they push him a little bit for the Money in the Bank ladder matches. Yes, of course the crowd chanted, "We want tables," in a match whose gimmick has been only ladders for a near 20 years. Hey, no DQ just gets the chat. He gets it automatically. There's a reason I often talk about WWE fan experience being Pavlovian responses to the thing. Also, they did get their tables. With women's match, they got their tables, that damn crowd. They knew something was up. Thumbs up to Chad Gable suplexing a ladder onto Andrade's head. Oh, I love that. Knight and Uso working together to take out McIntyre before climbing the ladder to launch into yeet, yeah, punch combat. Don't worry, Melo put an end to that. Spot of the match as Andrade and Melo shine together once again. Knight pushing El Idolo forwards, sending the man into hitting a sunset flip powerbomb onto Melo, with them both crashing onto the rope prop ladder. Gable with a belly-to-belly tossing LA Knight overhead as well, over the top rope, onto the big ladder, balanced on the apron and the announce table. LA Knight was not the guy that I predicted to take the crazy ladder bump being tossed overhead. Jey Uso alone in the ring for the final tease of someone other than Drew winning. But then Drew does win, getting through that ladder match with all the other lads taking those crazy bumps. I guess it's time to just jump to Priest versus Rollins. The World Heavyweight Championship, Damian Priest versus Seth Rollins. Seth out here to give Priest his best title defense. The expected pattern of the Judgment Day coming out, not happening on this night. However, Drew McIntyre had said, "I will be cashing in." So whenever the guy was in momentum and control in this match, every single time they would look down the ramp saying, "Well, I know he's going to come out. I know he's going to come down." Priest taking it to Rollins, calls Cole as Damian gives Seth a wee little kick on the bum. Say, no one will get that reference. which of my listeners will have watched Gaki no Sakai from like the mid-2000s? No one know that. That's why that only aired on Japanese TV. Round of applause for the Falcon Arrow off sequence. The flow of that exchange was bloody excellent. Then Priest doesn't kick out. The ref doesn't count the three. Vince had a mantra of, like, you count it regardless. If you don't kick out, that's on you. You've mucked up. He wanted it to seem ridiculous that way, whilst Triple H is more focused on, no, we'll keep to our story. Like, if you don't kick out, it will look shit, but people will get over it. In the press conference afterwards, he was like, eh, these things happen. And that's my attitude towards it. Like, from either company, when something like this happens, it's like, oh, they're rubbish, they're awful, whatever. These end, like, little botches and things. Like who cares? They happen. They happen all the time. Like, it really doesn't matter. But lo and behold, a few seconds later, McIntyre's music hits, charging down to cash in and turn the match into a triple threat. No DQ in triple threats is the rule that allows CM Punk to cost Drew one more time, whipping that man around ringside and clobbering him with a chair. Punk grabbing the world championship, one final clobber to the Scots head, south of heaven, and Priest retains, seemingly pissed about the failed kickout right at the big interference moment of the match. All the direction and the fan heat have been passed towards CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. The thing that reminds you that there'd been that botch was Priest's face. Like, he was pissed. He was angry. WWE fans are loving their moments, got a meal's worth here. Seth seething at ringside afterwards because Punk also screwed him in the process. Priest was always winning here, though, because, like, with Gunter waiting in the wings as the King of SummerSlam, there's no point in crowning Drew. But Seth Rollins has been brought into the mix, makes it all worth it. So it's only that question of, well, it didn't need the heat, so why did he have to use the money in the bank in this? And I'm like, it did advance it, because now Seth Rollins is brought in. The money in the bank doing that has now brought Seth Rollins in, because they've cost Seth Rollins. Yeah, all of it is undone by Damian Priest and Raw just saying, if I retain at SummerSlam, I'll give you a title match. Like, it's all undone. Everything, the stakes are gone. But in the moment, and during that opening promo on Monday Night Raw, it all felt deserved and earned. They built that world up. My rule is, you can make anything make sense in your world if you put in the effort. And that's what they've done here. For me, Money in the Bank is meant to aid a storyline or elevate a wrestler up into a position or just like an awesome flow to then use. This did all of that, just not in your typical old pop and moment. Like, is that really all you want from your wrestling, to get the same pops all the time, every single year, like your routine stuff? You're still going to get it with Tiffany Stratton. Like, you don't have to wait an entire year to get the Money in the Bank pop. But for me, like, there isn't a negative. The negative isn't that big that the Money in the Bank briefcase was used in this spot. It fueled this feud so much more. And again, brought Seth Rollins into the void of it. It's like, yeah, really well done. And it makes the opening promo from Monday Night Raw equally as deserved and earned. They've put in the effort to get that reaction out of me. And the Money in the Bank match itself as well was perfectly fun. Like, weirdly for me, I enjoyed the women's a lot more because there was a sense of danger instilled in the first part of it. There was a rough, like, 3-4 minutes where it seemed like something was going wrong a little bit. Like, luckily none of the ladder spots went properly wrong, which was more the other stuff. There was like a 3-minute period where seemingly nobody could hit everything quite correctly. I think the peak of it was Zoe Stark doing her spinny, flippy thing off the ropes. Land and the head just hits the ladder instead of like her landing on the opponent at all. Just like, oh, yeah. But that then added to the danger, so that when they did have control of the match later on, it had that height of danger to it, which is, if you instill that into a Money in the Bank ladder match, then you've got something special. So I enjoyed the women's more, but this had some really cool spots. Again, big round of applause to Andrade as that modern day Shelton Benjamin, innovative guy. Carmelo Hayes taking the crazy bumps. I wasn't expecting LA Knight to take the overhead suplex. Really earning his stripes in this one. So yeah, it was a strong Money in the Bank ladder match. Like, nowhere near like my favourites or anything, but yeah, solid enough. It was decent enough. Also, oof to Chad Gable when he was hanging onto the title in the air, and the whole point was Jey Uso then just kind of waits for him to fall. But the bump that he takes, where he seemingly just lands flat on his front and then bumps his face on the mat and bumps his chin. And I was just like, no. Seemed to be fine the next day in that regard, but oof. It either made that look pretty painful, or it really was painful. I mean, that's my thoughts on the men's stuff. Let's actually jump over to the women's.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Naomi, Zoe Stark, Lyra Valkyria, Tiffany Stratton, and Chelsea Green, and Io Sky. A match that started a little rough, but ended in the crowd giving a standing ovation. If anything, that start added to the car crash nature, a sentiment that remained even when the danger was under control. Well, as controlled as you can get in these matches. Stratton with the loudest pop of the women's entrances, like easy to pick out the fan favourite. Canada's own Chelsea Green also getting love. Chelsea's story is that she's afraid of heights, attempting outside-the-box ideas, like trying to poke the briefcase down with a ladder. The crowd were all in on her shenanigans, and over the course of the match, it built and built. She would get a bit more. She tried like a step further. She'd just do something a little bit more each time she got a ladder. She'd either be climbing up a little bit more or just being a little bit more brave until the peak moment where she's atop the ladder and it ends in the worst bump of up for everybody. She gets the biggest crash out of them all. Stratton and Io Shirai, yeah, unsurprisingly, having great chemistry together. They were so fun to watch every time both of them in the ring together. Valkyria having a tough first little run here. This was the 3-minute moment I was talking about. She was a little too far forward to toss Io into the ladder, getting caught on the ropes after getting the angle slightly wrong for the tornado DDT. A great improvisation with a fisherman's buster onto the ladder instead. So in the end, it got a good pop. But then struggled to kick open the ladder before Zoe Stark missed her slam and ended up crashing Lyra's arm and shoulder onto the ladder. Like, good lord. And then the misfortune immediately passes on to Stark as her springboard twisty thingy also missed with her head catching the edge of the ladder instead. So that just was a rough few minutes, but that rough few minutes adds to the entire rest of the match. Immediately after that, you got Tiffy, Naomi and Io, they're calming things down. And, sure, Naomi took an Alabama slam to her ladder, but for a moment, we calmed the car crash down a smidge. However, that sentiment of it being of that car crash was still there. And then that sort of thing adds to the rest of the spots. A great spot with Lyra's legs caught in the ladder dangling upside down, receiving stomps to the face for Io, who then climbs over her, only for Lyra to lift up and German Sky off the ladder. Valkyria, the rare combination of being both light and strong enough to pull that off. Speaking of spots any one person could pull off, Naomi doing the splits between two ladders. In reward, she gets the tables pop to pull them out from under the ring. Lyra updates, Zoe Stark one-arm powerbombs her onto a draped ladder. Goddamn. Valkyria probably hurt Sunday. Chelsea getting bigger and bigger pops as the match goes on. The crowd getting behind her, getting more brave and climbing a little higher each time. For me, the spot of the match was Io Sky nailing a Falcon Arrow onto Stark off the very tippy top of the ladder. Good lord. Chelsea Green finally up high. She did it! And crashes with that highest fall. Stratton pushing the ladder over and sending the poor Canadian crashing through two tables ringside. The kind of fall you normally see at a second height of tables to cushion the fall with. Chelsea's mad, so nah, none of that. None of that. Stratton winning. Predictable winners doesn't equal bad winners when it's all because the built-up momentum is heading in the right direction. That era of Vince swerving direction to catch out the fans was always detrimental in the long run. Sure, on the night you got a pop, but now you got to put up with Zack Ryder being IC champion. why? What's the point? The crowd was standing in applause for ages with Tiffy up posing as the replays aired. Round of applause to this match. For me, easily match of the night. Easily the Money in the Bank match as well. And is that essence of that car crash? because it started to go a little bit wrong, that sense of danger was there. But it relatively got in control of pretty quickly. Because the essence stayed, whenever they started doing increasingly brutal stuff, that sense of danger really added to everything. So yeah, sometimes something going a little bit wrong can actually be the greatest blessing. The Intercontinental Championship, Sami Zayn versus Bron Breakker. Right when Sami was finally past Chad Gable and able to enjoy his IC title reign to try and make it something, in charges the youth. I'm sure there's an age metaphor in there somewhere. And if you want to be with anyone in the ring to help make you for your career-launching first title win, you'd want that man to be Sami Bloody Zayn. Obviously, this night wasn't that title win, but it's where we're going, it's where we're going. Snaps of hope through limited opportunities for the champion, but then those moments swiftly broken back in Breaker's favour, a real showcase for Big Bron, nailing that pop-up head scissors flying off the apron onto the announce table. The final flow excellently entered a zone of not knowing who was going to win, doing well to convince you that this was Bron's breakout moment, Sami instead becoming Breaker's first real wall he's going to have to bounce back from. First Helluva kick charge met with a Bron knee, but then his spear was also met with a knee, Helluva kick, and Zayn retains. Really, really strong back and forth. They played it out to the expectancy. It's like, okay, we're just expecting Bron Breakker to win here. So why not just play into that? That's exactly what they did. Fully played into it, and then they use that to show Sami Zayn's fight as champion. It's like, no. Sami Zayn is champion for a reason. And the way that they've done this feud, it enhances Sami Zayn, meaning that if Bron Breakker beats him at SummerSlam, it's not your typical old John Cena three-match rivalry. You beat me, I beat you, I win overall. It's like, no, this isn't the pattern that we're going with here. Like, sure, Bron Breakker's likely to win at SummerSlam. But because of what they did here, they showed that Bron Breakker, he got a reality check that he needed to actually elevate himself, that he wasn't going to be that easy. Maybe he got a bit nonchalant. And someone like Sami Zayn is the elevation. So Sami Zayn gets elevated by him being like, no, to defeat me, you genuinely do have to bring your A game. You do need to step up. You can't be treating me like you're treating the others. It's not going to happen like that. So then Bron Breakker overcomes that. So he gets elevated by overcoming it. And then Sami Zayn gets elevated by being a wall strong enough to stop him. Then before we got to the next match, Trish Stratus brought out John Cena for a surprise appearance. Cena announcing his retirement from the WWE, wearing his t-shirt with The Last Time Is Now and John Cena Farewell Tour. That wasn't enough of a hint for some people. wearing all that gear and stuff, and still you saw quite a few reactions. Just being like, oh my God, really? So, well, yeah, it's literally written all over him. Don't even need film language for that one. No, it's literally written right there. He'll be back for the Road to WrestleMania shows, but the Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, and WrestleMania Las Vegas will be his last appearances on those shows. Which then brings us to the main event, Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, and Randy Orton versus the Bloodline. And folks were making their entrances with a whole 40 minutes remaining, because I didn't watch this live, and I was like, surely we're not getting another 30-minute six-man. Like, are we getting an angle? I wasn't expecting an angle, but are we getting one? Nah. Just instead filling the match with a whole lot of baddie momentum, slowing, naughty, stomping, nothing. It's like, okay, we are getting the longer match. Jacob Fatu is impressive, but his explosiveness reserved until the final minutes. The same with the babyface's fire, burning into a mini kindling every now and then, but really we were watching an Uso pacing bubble for 15 minutes. Cody finally getting the hot tag to Lamp Solo with those 10 minutes remaining. Back in the ring, Solo accidentally gets the official taken down. Cue a spree of chaos, starting with the goodies teaming up on Solo, but ending in Bloodline. A full brawl ringside as the lads fight over the announce table. The ref taken down again. KO splashing off the barricade through the announce table to take out Fatu. KO punching the dick by Loa. RKO's in the ring to all. Cody getting the visible crossroads, beating off Sokoa. But Fatu rises like the beast and flies in with a whisper in the wind, well, more of a shout in the storm with a lad his size. Fatu and Sokoa together to beat Cody and give Solo the pin over the champion, leading us into SummerSlam. The Bloodline victorious, but only when it turned 4-3, and Sokoa himself needed the 2-on-1 with him losing the battle himself against Cody. So he had lots of little stories and little things within there. It's like, yes, Solo got his visible pin over Cody. It's like he's getting a lot of the booking behind him, but there is still that air of, it doesn't feel like he's got the momentum to challenge Cody for that title. It's one of those where you can feel the creative force behind him trying to convince you that he should be in this spot rather than it feeling right. You can feel the machine process behind him rather than it just feeling like being told and presented a natural story you can get invested in. You can see the cogs turning to try and position him correctly. It still goes back to that main thing of he beat John Cena in Saudi Arabia. got that huge, huge win to look like a dominant guy. Then just given nothing, and he was given losses, and he took all his momentum was taken away from him. He started being used as like another prop guy to be beaten on the road to facing Roman. He just didn't have that much momentum. And then over the course of this storyline, he's been positioned as the new guy. And put a lot of effort and work into positioning him as the head of this new Bloodline guy. But you as a viewer didn't really have that want to see him in that position because all of his momentum had been taken away. So as a character, they're having to rebuild all his momentum back up with this group. And for me, Fatu was the missing piece. Once he turned up, I'm perfectly fine with this group. But because of the way the story was done, without him having that build-up before WrestleMania or since the John Cena thing, they haven't kept him bubbling or hot at all. Instead, they took it all away and then they've tried to bubble it up again here. If it already existed, it's the same critique you have Tim Fees that I say every single week. If it was already been heated up, then the perception of him is completely different. That feeling of the cogs, you would have been kind of wanting it a bit. When I say you can feel the machine behind him rather than it feeling like the story, you're just waiting for Roman. And unfortunately, that's not going to change. Unfortunately, it's going to be really difficult for you to get invested in the story because that's all you're waiting for is that SummerSlam. You're waiting for that Roman Reigns pop. For the entire match, that's all it's going to be. Which sucks, in a way. It just means that this Cody Rhodes doesn't have that hot SummerSlam match to like, really get invested in because of this. And people even float the idea of, did he even do the Solo Sikoa match at Money in the Bank and then you have Cody versus Randy Orton? There's like, people were floating other ideas. You can see where this was going. Again, predictable isn't bad. It just meant, because you can see things going, when you know you're not that invested in it, it's like, oh, but there could be like other better things. It's like, oh, that's just the Solo character. Anyway, my overall take on Money in the Bank, it was like, yeah, it was fine. I saw quite a lot of people down on the show. I thought it was absolutely fine. I didn't see any reason to be super negative about it. I saw quite a few just calling it one of the worst Money in the Banks. So I was like, really? Like, yeah, go back and watch them. Like, there's quite a few duds in there. Quite a few duds. But for me, this year's was... I really enjoyed both Money in the Bank ladder matches. I really enjoyed the whole Drew CM Punk stuff with the Seth Rollins and Damian Priest match. Especially the way it builds in Seth Rollins, and I'm about to talk about that even escalating even better. But like for the show itself, like it was fine. It was absolutely fine. But both Money in the Bank ladder matches stood out, and that's the entire point of it for me. If you enjoy the Money in the Bank ladder matches, then this Money in the Bank show has done its job, and the main event's not for me. But you see how hot those crowds are. Like, and then my critique of Solo Sikoa and stuff, like, sure, I'd like to be more invested, but clearly some people are. Just watch those reactions. Maybe that's because the baby faces at the moment, especially Cody Rhodes, are so incredibly hot and over that it doesn't really matter that Solo's not quite bubbling up quite as nicely as much as they want. Again, at the end of the day, the Solo Sikoa and Reigns match is possibly only bubbling to give us another Cody versus Roman match. Like, do they do it again? In my head, this bubbles up into Roman versus Rock at WrestleMania so they can finally do that match. And maybe it's what they do. Maybe you have Roman versus Cody at Royal Rumble instead of WrestleMania, and then you do Roman versus Rock at WrestleMania, Cody versus... Hopefully they built up someone by then. It's the main bond with Cody. He's super over, but he's... not got any challengers, and they've not particularly bubbled anyone up to be a challenger. So if it's not Roman or The Rock, then I don't know who he's facing at WrestleMania. If no one else has been bubbled up to challenge him at the moment. There's time, it's still the summer. Like you often see somebody over the course of the autumn really gain momentum, and it could be them or whatever. Last year, that's how we had LA Knight really bubbling around this period and really hitting that apex, going for Roman's title at Saudi Arabia. Anyway, yeah. Perfectly fine Money in the Bank. For me, anybody who was crapping on it's one of the worst Money in the Bank stuff, that's just being reactionary. It wasn't. Flat out, it just wasn't. It was a perfectly enjoyable show. That's it. Anyway, before I spend way too long, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw, remaining in Canada, jumping over to Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, for Monday Night Raw.
Now, you got most of it figured out, except for the one thing that would actually make you the hero that you think you are. You haven't figured out that the world does not revolve around CM Punk.
Whoa, this was good, wasn't it? This was good. CM Punk and Seth Rollins opening the show with one hell of a promo. Punk hyped the crowd up to cheer for Drew getting his suspension lifted. With his actions have consequences, I am the consequence of your actions promo. Instead, we got Burn It Down playing. Seth having none of Punk, the man saying he's trying to apologise. I'm sorry, but because it's you, I can't really be that sorry. Seth's response so perfectly digging into Punk's character. You've never had to apologise for anything because you're never in the wrong, right? Calling Punk out on his gaslighting, telling him to his face that if he's really that smart, then he's the dumbest smart dude he's ever met in his life. Such a great delivery from Seth, telling the man you've not figured out that the world does not revolve around CM Punk. Raising his voice to get across the anger and disdain he has for the man, but not entering wrestler shouty promo territory. We also saw an exceptional example of this from Hangman Page after AEW Collision this week. You've seen two promos where they're escalating and you can see that anger. Adam Page has somehow got this ability to just turn his face pink and red in a rage of anger in an instant, which really adds to what he's selling. But both, I mean, there were two really good examples of showing that anger and disdain, but not turning it into wrestler shouty promo. You can be a selfish bastard anywhere else. You can burn bridges anywhere else. I'll let it slide because I'm above you. The delivery sells it, but round of applause to whoever wrote that line for Seth. Really, really good. Perfectly bringing the focus back to Punk, costing him the World Heavyweight Championship. You took that away from me. Now it's my turn to take that away from you. When you are cleared, you won't be able to say the name Drew McIntyre before I break that arm and punt you back on the shelf. Actions have consequences. Freaking perfect. It bloody nailed it. so well good. Because I was talking about Money in the Bank, the interesting note, really interesting, the actual note there for me was Seth Rollins getting brought into this. I thought that was a really interesting note coming out of Money in the Bank, and the fact that he opened up with it in Monday Night Raw and delivered a promo this good, hitting on all of the notes we wanted to see played. Oh, that's absolutely perfect. The fact that CM Punk is meant to be like, it's babyface CM Punk, but the way that Seth Rollins does his promos against him, as you're watching it, you're like, yeah, you're right. Like, and they can tell, it's the reason for me that it's so good is you believe every single thing that Seth Rollins' character is saying. Just because the way that he delivers it, it makes you question if there's that air of reality being put in there. My assumption is, oh, there's maybe some sentiments within there, but the actual context of it is all character driven. It's just being delivered so well that it creates that feeling of what you're seeing. That, oh, am I actually seeing a guy air some of his real life frustrations with the person? It's all in test of delivery. there's a bit of kudos I want to give him to those who don't call him a good promo. Every single thing he's done with CM Punk, all of those promos are great examples. Like, no. This is the work that Seth Rollins can do. He can be the goofy, weird bastard where I hate his character. He can do that, but also he can do this. When he does this stuff for CM Punk, this shows how great he can actually be on the mic. I thought this promo was brilliant. I think the best thing about it for me is CM Punk still remains the babyface in all of this, but you also believe every single word that Seth Rollins is saying. It's just delivered with such a believability. It's like, oh yeah, I believe that, A, you genuinely believe all of the things that you're saying with your heart, with your gut. But also, I believe that a lot of the things you're saying are also true about CM Punk. But also, at the same time, none of this makes me want to cheer against CM Punk or whatever in this story, in this arc. I still see Drew McIntyre is definitely the bad guy. CM Punk is still our babyface. But Seth Rollins is also our babyface. It's coming from a different dynamic. And I can see why CM Punk and Seth Rollins definitely don't get along with each other. Because I don't want all of my heroes to definitely get along or whatever. It's way more interesting when they don't. For me, it's boring if all the good guys get along because they're the good guys and the other ones are the bad guys. No. It's what AEW brought back into the fold of my wrestling fandom, technically New Japan for wrestling before it, that identity for all the different characters, where if they've all got their different beliefs and their different ways of looking at wrestling or careers or whatever, then when they come against each other, because they've got those established characteristics, they can fight over that rather than you're the goodie, I'm the baddie, I'm going to stop the baddie because I'm the superhero. No, it's way more interesting if you're fighting over all that other stuff. You've got established characters that can go against each other for that stuff. That's exactly what this is with Seth Rollins and CM Punk. You know why both guys so strongly believe they're in the right. But you're not going to boo against either of them because he's still going to cheer them. And the fact that the promo like this can be that heated and still straddle that line just speaks to how great both performers are in it. CM Punk has got one hell of a no, Mr. Grumpy face when someone comes a promo like this on him. That really helps sell it too. I'm not going to ignore that. It's like, no. He's grumpy, wumpy. Little grumpy, wumpy few when he gets that face on him. A little note is that Pat McAfee can't stop calling him Phil. I don't know why. That's a thing. Because when Seth Rollins' music hit, CM Punk crossed his legs and sat on the announce table when he was talking to Pat on commentary. He was like, Pat, if we just talk about Money in the Bank for a second, like, you call me by my government name. Like, what's going on here? And then just like a minute later, when he's talking about it, he's just like, yeah, go get him, Phil. He's like, yeah, he just can't do it. For some reason, the name CM Punk just escapes Pat's mind when he gets excited. Speaking of really good things, marred in with something I'm still not into. Rhea Ripley returns. Thank fucking Christ. We can finally move on. It's been my main critique of this story. And I feel like there's been a lot of comparisons and stuff. I feel like some of the eyes have been built up even more seeing how good AEW's women's title match is for their summer big show. How long they spent building that up and how strong the characters and the story is and everything. Whilst this is what WWE is offering as their main women's storyline. It's one of those storylines that just screams that it's something written through a male gaze. Rather than, you'd watch the women's one and it feels like there's such strong involvement from the women performing it. Maybe they're just amazing actors or amazing wrestlers. But it feels like there's a lot of female input in that storyline. What's this here? Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if this is entirely written by dudes. Dudes in their 50s have written this stuff for the Liv Morgan storyline. It's just the air about it. Weirdly, it has somewhat worked for the Dom character to give him dynamics that it didn't have beforehand. I don't think it should be used to turn him babyface or whatever. Because I was like, this could be perfect to pull him away from Rhea Ripley. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get him trying to earn Rhea Ripley's trust or whatever over the weeks to get him to prove himself. And then Rhea Ripley finally like is like, okay, I finally believe you. You're whatever, I'm here. I'm mommy. You're my dom. I'm back. Don't worry or whatever. And then Dom turns around at SummerSlam. I wouldn't do that. But that could easily happen. Dom Mysterio, earlier in the night, having his HR complaint brushed aside. Because of course he did. This is the WWE we're talking about. But he wants it, really. Right? Like, it doesn't matter. Well, like, was now really the time to run a sexual harassment in the workplace storyline? I've seen some pushback against that sentiment of this really wasn't the time to do this kind of storyline. I've seen some people push back being like, that's not what it is. She's doing the manipulation game again with just using Dom to do that manipulation or whatever. And then my kind of thing is, yeah, but she's sexually harassing him in the workplace when they're being investigated for the specifics is sex trafficking. This is still harassment in the workplace. That's what this storyline is. And Dom, the character, has been shown multiple times to say no. Violation number one of Liv continuing to do this. And this is why I say the male gaze thing. And it's like with the thing of, oh, but he wants it really, doesn't it? Like, it's fine though, because she's hot, right? That's what I mean by it's a male fantasy thing. This screams that kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's fine because of these reasons. Like, no, just don't do the sexual harassment storyline. It's kind of like, I think one of the things I said in the first few weeks was, I'm not saying don't ever do it. I'm saying don't do it right now. I mean, my preferable world would be don't do it, but I know there's an audience for this shit who will eat it all up. And case in point, just watching the reactions of this, obviously you've got defenders for whatever, but there are people who really will want this kind of storyline. My thing is, don't do it right now. Whilst Vince McMahon is being investigated for sex trafficking by the FBI, not just by like a court or whatever, by the FBI, and it's not just Vince McMahon, it's the company as well. The company of WWE is being investigated into this. It's not just Vince. And yeah, then they're doing this storyline. And I remember, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I remember getting quite agitated. Just with that thing of, how do you think this conditions your audience to react when the verdict on Vince McMahon comes out, or when more Janelle Grant stuff comes out, or when the next person comes out? How do you think this kind of story conditions your audience to react to it? It's the power of the language of film and media and stuff. Like, you do hold responsibility when you have an audience like that, because they do take influence from it. You get people saying, oh, I shouldn't take influence from telly, whatever. But it happens. Like, even just if you don't mean to, you will start to take like influence or whatever. TV shows, especially as kids and things, like, have lessons and morality within them all over the place. It's why it's stupid to say that I don't want my TV show or my sci-fi to have politics in it. So, no. If it doesn't have that, it's boring as shit. And even not having it is a political stance. So it's like there's all of these different, even if you try not to, your views as a human will be put out there. It's a quote of, it's easier for the Western world to picture the fall of humanity than the fall of capitalism. Yeah, just like that's kind of proof of just, even if you're trying to, your view on life and biasy stuff from that way will just come into your work anyway. It's very difficult for someone from America to not have the capitalist kind of influence and look at it when they're creating a sci-fi world. Even a great one. I may have tangented a little bit. It's a little bit. Even now I'm debating whether to keep that in, but I liked it. I like the way it went in a way. My main point being, this is, for me, it always screams that it's taken influence from something very close to home that's happening around them. I just wouldn't run it now. This isn't the right time to do this. Especially as, again, if the verdict is relatively close to coming out soon, this conditions your audience to react to the accusers in a very certain way. because this storyline is painted as an album. But they wanted it, though. Look at them flaunting around like that, doing it all this. It's like, it's not a great thing to be conditioning your audience to react to, like. So, not a fan of this story at all. My other critique was the focus isn't on the Liv stuff and her doing this character if you're able to move a beat forward. This beat for Liv and what she's doing with Dom, that is step one for her character. We've just been repeating the same step over and over and over, which is why when I say, should you be running the sexual harassment storyline, it's she comes on to Dom, Dom says no. Next week, she comes on to Dom, Dom says no. This week even went to authority, just in terms of like taking this out of a fiction world and putting it into like a reality world. He's gone to his boss and said, look, I cannot work with this person. I'm being harassed. Can you do something about it? And he's gone, nah, I think you're a bit of a dick, so I'm gonna make you work with her. It's like, what is this? Absolutely not. No, in no world is that acceptable, Adam Pearce. In no world is that acceptable. But if, obviously the Ray Ripley injury was one thing, but if the storyline had moved past, I think my prediction was she does take Dom away from the Judgment Day, or she convinces some other ones or whatever. Like, we were seeing a little bit start to happen where she was getting the sway of the other members of Judgment Day. Like, I didn't mind any of that stuff, because that is, you can see the plan playing for the very piece of when you're doing that sort of thing. Unfortunately, the beats with Dom were just repeating every single week. And their story was, oh, look, he's beginning to crack because, he actually did like her all along. Look at it, because she's hot. It's okay, right? Even though you're repetitively showing him saying no. Even though this week the escalation with Dom was for him to go to Adam Pearce when they then show him like cracking the most afterwards, and that's when Ray Ripley returns. The Ray Ripley return is the point where I'm like, that's why I was like, oh, thank God, we can finally make start two for this storyline. You don't get as much of a critique about, like, should you be running the sexual harassment storyline type of stuff. You don't get as much of a critique of that if you actually move past step one. They've been repeating the same step week after week after week, and they haven't progressed it. So the only note is the sexual harassment stuff. That's the only note we've got. So of course that's going to be the critique. The moment you bring Ripley back, I've got something else to talk about. Finally, there is something else for me to focus on. So yeah, that stuff is still there. But I've got another thing over here, like as a reviewer, as a critiquer, I've got another thing to talk about that's distracting me now. Finally, it's moving forward. It's going to go into that next gear. I just would have liked to have seen it before Ripley got there, instead of it just being the one note thing. Just I was trying to pry away Dom to get better Ripley. He's like, why couldn't you just done it? Is it as bad if they don't week after week after week show us Dom saying no, but she keeps doing it anyway? It's like, no, it's textbook workplace harassment. It's textbook. Don't be conditioning your audience like this. Anyway, but we'll say the second Ray and Zelina versus Dom and Liv was announced in the main event, you knew something was up. Like, this match doesn't main event. What's going on here? The other thing that I don't like about this storyline, like, Liv's generally become such a good performer, where this spot is more than valid for her. But through this, the focus has become, she's hot though, right? When she's so much more than that. It's another thing where it irks me. It's like, I generally rate her as a performer now. But this storyline has done that no justice. Dom beating Ray with a frog splash thanks to Liv's help. Liv in the aftermath, realising that she finally has Dom twisted and ready to convert religion when This Is My Brutality booms, Ripley returns and Liv scurries off in shock, Rhea having none of Dom's excuses after the show goes off air as well. They hit the mark for Americans, but us Brits over here, we got to see what happened. We got to see the end. Sami Zayn is still your Intercontinental Champion, 93 days in counting, after fending off the force of change from the youth. Canada had a lot of love for their Canadian champion, allowing himself a moment of arrogance as champion, using the win over Breaker as a nice re-establishing of his new chapter for his character. He's no longer an underdog, he's a champion. Breaker out for an angry stare, Sammy even pushed the mic into the man's chest, feigning a grounded and realistic standing in spite of this being his rookie year. But it's a ruse, a spear! Staff and officials out to stop Breaker, but Pierce easily tricked with a, what's that over there? Switched to the high wide angle for the spear charge around the ring. Sammy out of his boots for a second time. Ilya out to help Sammy after the break in the medical room, asking Pierce to give him a match against Big Bron, which leads us into Big Bron Breaker versus Ilya Dragunov. Bron the breakout star, but they've done such a good job establishing Ilya too. This match a nice reminder of that, before Breaker breaks a man, priming him to win his title rematch at SummerSlam. Dragunov with a lot of answers for Breaker, like he ended having studied the man or whatever. So Breaker just launched an announce chair at him. I was like, oh, we saw him. He did the charge around the ring and that got blocked. He tried to do the jump up onto the corner to do the head scissors. That also got blocked. So when when that charge around the ring got blocked, he then just grabbed an armchair, just chucked it at him, was like, sod it. I was like, you know what? As a beat for Breaker's character, I love that. I do really like that. Sammy out to save Ilya. So Breaker beats him up ringside too. I thought that that was perfect character notes for every single person involved. This is what you use TV for. It's really amp it up like this. Probably said this is quite an exciting SummerSlam run. Maybe you get Ilya in there as well, and that's how Sammy loses the title. Or Ilya's used, unfortunately, again, as a prop for someone else's rivalry if it's going to Breaker versus him again. Other notes just to quickly bash through. A taped-up Jey Uso faced a bandaged and wincing Chad Gable. Wired 6, Spooky Spook costing him the match as the lights flickered off. Smoke engulfing Chad's broken Jey Uso speared body as the piano plays. WWE censorship for the crowd chanting holy shit ruined any ambiance for the TV as they have to keep cutting the sound out every time the crowd says shit. And it's meant to be that dung, dung, dung kind of growing tension with the piano. But you also miss out on the piano because they keep cutting the sound. It's like, get a grip, American sponsors. Like, who cares? Really, come on. Spooky Nikki Cross Abigail scaring him off and making her latest Amazon delivery. This was a third week of Bo Dallas on a VHS tape. This week, bringing the others into the Spooky Spook fold. Glutton Gacy, Mercy Loomis, Grief and Loss Rowan, and the love of Nikki Cross. You think we're sick? Then sick is what we'll be. I thought that was a really nice line, setting us up for Bo Dallas actually showing his face in person for the first time, waiting in Pierce's locker room, as I hope this is the next progression after 3 weeks of tapes. It felt like it, but you never know. Big Bronson Reed faced Pete Dunne. Bay injured on NXT, so why not use the Birmingham lad to enhance Reed's feud with Shamu? Cool Irish Judgment of Carlito and JD and Bella versus Awesome Truth and Strowman was also on this show. I know, right? All killer, no filler on this one. Oh boy. Damage Control had a wee little six-woman tag against Valkyria and the Party Girls. Cue Sonny Deville arriving with Stark and Baszler. We felt like, oh, are they turning the Damage Control goodies? Hooray to finally seeing Deville under creative that knows maybe else will actually use her. And that brings us to the end of Monday Night Raw. Some really strong notes for it with the opener and with the Sami Zayn stuff with Bron Breakker and that lot. And a big note in Rhea Ripley returning. It's going to help the show so much more. And it's not just that, oh, Rhea Ripley's back, she's a great performer there, so the show goes better. It's like, no, it means that the Liv Morgan and the Judgment Day storyline can actually go somewhere. And Damian Priest gets to build up his stuff with Gunther as well. So, like, things are directly going to strong places. It's just that some of the road to get there has been a little bit rocky. Anyway, this ended up being a really long recording. It happens every single time I do a pay-per-view show. So to save editing me, I'm going to say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never taken for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about Smackers and Monday Night Raw. What have we got to plug? So we've got to plug the AEW Match Guide that's coming up. So please do check out Sam on the AEW Match Guide with whoever his guest is for that first episode. And with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.